Hey guys, this is Erin from Red Run Blonde, and I wanted to tell you about a new feature on Acast that supports its artists. It's the supporter feature. Listeners to Red Run Blonde can now donate and support the podcast. However, there's no subscription or commitment. You can just give whenever or whatever you'd like. It's completely up to you. Just find the support the show link in the show description on any episode. You can use Apple Pay or Google Pay, and it takes less than 30 seconds. You can donate anonymously, or you can add a message that I can see. As a podcaster, everything comes directly out of my pocket. I don't get paid to podcast. It's just my passion. So anything is appreciated to keep the show going. Thank you so much, guys. And now on to the show.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Red Rum Blonde. This is a true crime podcast. Each week, I'll explore a case, the victims, the facts, and the mystery surrounding it. Some are solved, some remain unsolved. I'm your host, Erin Fleming. Hey guys, welcome to Red Rum Blonde. I know it feels like it's been 5 billion years since I posted a new episode. It's just been a crazy perfect storm of things going wrong whenever I try to do anything. I've been working some crazy shifts at work, which has messed up my sleep, which has messed up my writing schedule. My recording schedule is never on a normal schedule, and it got even more messed up. I got a new microphone, which is great, but that messed up my levels on recording. I recorded this whole episode, but it could not be heard properly. Anyways, here it is. Finally, we're getting to the new episode. As we all know, immigration is a very hot button issue right now in the headlines pretty much every day. The United States government was just in a shutdown not that long ago over a proposed wall to keep immigrants from entering into the country from Mexico. And right before the holidays, families were being detained. Children were separated from their parents. And when those families were being detained, many immigration lawyers came forward to represent them, many of them doing pro bono work. Now, imagine a former immigration lawyer killing people in a racially motivated spree. It seems kind of impossible that someone could resort to that behavior after going into that line of work. But this week's subject did such a thing. In April of 2000, a former immigration lawyer killed 5 people, and he left one person paralyzed in a horrific killing spree. This week, I'll discuss the murderer, Richard Baumhammers. But before I get into that, I do want to welcome the newest members to the Red Rum Blonde Facebook group. We have Claire, Dave, Abigail, and then I'm going to butcher your name, so don't get upset with me or tell me how to properly say your name. Sanette, she's from South Africa, which is mind-blowing to me that anyone in another country might listen. And then we also have Sarah from Ireland, which made me think of DNA tests. And I recently got results back from a DNA test that I did, and it confirmed a lot of what I knew would be there, which is Irish, Welsh, little bit of German, British, no surprises. But I was surprised to find Norwegian, Swedish, and Russian. So yeah, basically, I'm the whitest person out there. I was definitely little disappointed in the lack of diversity in my DNA. I thought there was Native American on both sides of my family. So either they said if you don't see results that you thought were in your family, that it might not be in the tests that they use, or, you know, maybe that's not in your family. So I have to do some digging and find out. But like I said, not too shocked. The test company did ask if you're willing to let your results be used in research, which I totally agreed to, because after hearing all the recent developments in cold cases, I was all for this. Yes, use my DNA if it helps anything. I mean, it would suck to be related to a murderer, but I would totally be willing to help nab somebody with my DNA. Okay, so let's get into this week's episode. Upon doing my research, I discovered that until the very recent Tree of Life shootings, this week's case was the worst racially motivated hate crime in Pennsylvania. I don't recall hearing about it, but at that time, I think I was living in Ohio. So if it made national news, you know, I might have missed it. And when I first began my research, I was really just totally baffled as to how this man could have come to do what he did. So I'm going to go into his background in life and try to give you a sense of what went wrong with him. Then I'll go into the details of that day of his killing spree. Richard Baumhammers was born on May 17, 1965 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And his parents were Lutheran Latvian immigrants named Inese and Andreas. Those two had fled the Soviet takeover of their country. And rounding out the family was Richard's older sister, Dana. The family moved to the wealthy Mount Lebanon area, a suburb of Pittsburgh. So they were doing very well. Both Andreas and his wife were working for the University of Pittsburgh School of Dental Medicine, and they had a very successful practice near the university. And Mount Lebanon is one of those areas that you kind of drive through and just marvel at the size of the houses. I've heard that a lot of the Pittsburgh Steelers and Pittsburgh Penguins live there, and I don't doubt it. It's a ritzy place. So after high school, Richard graduated from Kent State University in Ohio, and then he studied at the Cumberland Law School in Birmingham, Alabama. He was well-liked by his classmates, and he performed well in school, finishing in the top third of his class. From there, he began a one-year international program at the University of the Pacific's McGeorge School of Law, which is near Sacramento, California. There, he received his master's degree and specialized in immigration and international law. And then for a while, he lived in Atlanta, Georgia, where he was a member of the Georgia Bar Association, before returning to his hometown of Pittsburgh. Now, this return was not something work-related or probably even a happy return. It was due to some very emotional and bad mental problems that he'd been having. In 1993, he'd voluntarily admitted himself to a psychiatric ward at least twice. His parents were very concerned, and they had him move back in with them. But Richard had actually been exhibiting signs of instability since his early childhood. One issue that plagued Baumhammers was thinking that he was scarred by the sun. And despite being told by dermatologists that his complexion was fine, he was still obsessed over the thought of it. In that same year, he went on a vacation to Europe, but he returned worse for the wear. His father said that while he was in the Ukraine, Richard said he felt euphoric. But by the time he got to Finland, he was convinced he was being followed. He also insisted that the FBI had their house bugged, and he couldn't openly speak to his parents. So instead, he made them go to the basement where they would all converse via pen and paper. Once again, he admitted himself to the hospital for treatment. At Pittsburgh's Western Psychiatric Hospital, Dr. Macheri Keshavan diagnosed him with delusional disorder of the persecutional type. According to Psychology Today, delusions are fixed beliefs that don't change, even when the person is presented with conflicting evidence. Like Richard thinking that his face was scarred, despite being told the opposite by dermatologists. The condition becomes a disorder when it continues for a month or longer. And unlike schizophrenia, patients with delusional disorder may appear very normal as long as an outsider doesn't touch upon their delusional themes. And so there are very different variations of delusional disorder. Richard's was specifically persecutory, leading individuals to think they're being cheated on, drugged, mistreated, or being followed. And it's the most frequent type. But even so, it's rare. Only 0.2% of people experience it at some point in their lifetime. And like schizophrenia, those symptoms generally start to appear in early adulthood. The cause is still unknown, but it is thought to be caused as a way to deal with stress or trauma. So maybe him being in law school qualified as something stressful or traumatic. Maybe that's a factor. I don't know. This is just me kind of throwing that out there. Therapy does seem to work best for patients, as well as antipsychotic medications. And there are some very famous people who suffered from delusional disorder, such as Pink Floyd's Syd Barrett, writer F. Scott Fitzgerald's wife Zelda, and would-be Reagan assassin John Hinckley Jr. Over the next few years, Richard went through around 8 psychiatrists, 16 different medications, and 4 different clinical psychologists. So unlike other people that I've covered on this podcast, I will commend him for trying to get some kind of help. I mean, many people don't seek help or they self-medicate. I mean, this whole thing kind of really makes me think about Richard Chase and how he had delusional thoughts about his blood and his bones, and he did not seek any kind of help. In 1997, Richard moved to Riga, Latvia. His grandparents were from that same town, and then in the 1930s, they'd lived just a block away from where he was currently residing. While there, he attempted to regain his family's properties that were lost during the Soviet takeover. Basically, what happened was the Soviet Union took over Latvia as part of the 1939 Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact with Nazi Germany. It was a neutrality pact between those two nations. Part of the agreement were defined borders and rearrangement of territories belonging to each. But to make a long story short, this did not work out. The Soviets invaded part of Germany in 1940, and then Germany invaded the Soviet Union. Parts of this pact were secret and only revealed after World War II. Many other nations did not even know of the agreement between the two superpowers. Time magazine called it the Commun-Nazi Pact. However, Baumhammer's claims for his family's properties needed to be filed by the year 1996, so he was a year late. Richard shared his apartment with another American named Dan, and a friend of theirs named Christine really remembers both men. She said Richard was excited to be in Riga, and he wanted to make the most out of being there. Both men were very interested in meeting Latvian women, but Dan was the only successful one, while Richard was described as awkward with women. He was so overly eager to talk to women that it was a running joke who would get stuck talking to him at parties. The only success he seems to have had with any female was the sex worker he hired and took to a hotel. However, he never seemed to display any violent behavior while there. His circle of friends remembers him as odd, but not a problem. He taught various English classes while there, and he even tried to get citizenship. He talked about various entrepreneurial projects, but none of those came to fruition. One of his friends back in the States, a guy named George Nairns, did notice that there was a problem with him. The two talked via email, and one day Richard talked about how he was being watched. And when George laughed it off, Richard asked how much they were paying him. George then asked his friend exactly why he thought he was being watched. Richard replied something about traveling a lot to different places. and that's when his friend urged him to get some kind of help. But he did not get help before trouble hit. In 1999, Baumhammers was arrested in Paris, France, for hitting Vivian Legarac, a 50-year-old bartender, because she was Jewish. Legarac said Baumhammers visited Le Loret Litre, a cafe she owned near the city's left bank. He drank two glasses of wine, all the while staring at her and her bartender for about 3 hours. The next day he returned, and when Legarac passed by him, he punched her in the forehead. Luckily, two off-duty plainclothes officers were at the cafe, and they apprehended him. Upon his arrest, he was very open about his mental troubles, leading police to take him to a psychiatric ward before formally charging him. And since the injury wasn't severe, it was treated as a minor crime. Baumhammers was released and he took a plane to Spain. Upon his return to Pittsburgh the next year in 2000, he purchased a Smith & Wesson 357 Magnum. And a day after that purchase, all hell broke loose. At about 1:30 in the afternoon, Baumhammers went next door and fatally shot his 63-year-old Jewish neighbor, Anita Nikki Gordon. Now, she had known Richard and his family for over 31 years. Gordon was born in Squirrel Hill, and she'd purchased the home in Mount Lebanon in 1969 after she completed her bachelor's degree in interior design. And that was the same year the Baumhammers moved next door. Her daughters were friends with Richard's sister, and the families were very friendly with each other, so there was no beef between them or any reason for him to be angry or to shoot her.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
So this made the death all the more confusing. And sadly, her little dog, Chipper, ran from the house when she was shot, but luckily he was found later. And after shooting Anita Gordon, Baumhammers then set fire to her home. Directly after his first murder, Richard Baumhammers drove to the Beth El congregation in Scott Township and fired shots into the windows of a synagogue. He then painted two red swastikas on the side of the building and wrote Jew on the shards of glass that remained. The situation could have been much worse, however. The temple housed a nursery school with about 116 preschool children, and about half of those kids were there in an afternoon class when Baumhammers opened fire. The children were in another building, and they didn't know about the gunshots. Not far from the synagogue, Richard then entered the India Grocer, where he fatally shot 31-year-old Anil Thakur. He was there picking up groceries on his lunch hour. The 25-year-old store manager, Sandeep Patel, was shot in the neck. He was paralyzed, being confined to a wheelchair for the rest of his life. Anil was originally from India, and he was in the U.S. on a work visa. He was here working as a computer engineer for a place called Widecom Inc. And his coworker, Joseph Lanuka, had driven him to the store and just dropped him off with the intention of picking him up 15 minutes later. When he returned to pick him up, he saw groceries all across the sidewalk and he feared that his coworker had been hurt in a robbery. He ran into the store where he saw Sandeep Patel lying motionless on the floor. By that time, police were there, and the patrolman was sitting beside Anil Thakur. He'd been shot 4 times. He was conscious, but he couldn't speak. Anil raised a finger to indicate that it was just one shooter, and he shook his head when asked if he knew his attacker. While attempts were made to notify his family in India, Anil's body sat at the morgue. Sandeep Patel was shot 2 times by bomb hammers, which, like I said before, left him paralyzed from the neck down. He passed away in 2007. After the shooting at the store, bomb hammers then drove to Carnegie, where he shot out the windows at another synagogue. Then he drove to the Robinson Town Center, where he walked into the Wai Fei Chinese restaurant. And there, he fatally shot 34-year-old manager Ji Yi, or Jerry Sun, and 27-year-old cook Theo, or Tony Pham, in front of all of the customers. Jerry had come to the U.S. from China on a student visa with the dream of playing drums in a symphony. Instead, he ended up working in restaurant management to support his new wife and 2 stepchildren. His wife, Mei Ling, was, of course, devastated by his death. They had met at Edinburgh University, where he was studying music. And I'd read that he'd worked at the new Dumpling House in Squirrel Hill, a place that I've been many times. When I read that close connection, it really broke my heart even more. Everyone at that place is so kind. Because Jerry was such a good employee, he got the job at Wai Fei Chinese Cuisine. And the couple were saving up to start their own restaurant. Jerry was also helping to pay his stepson's college tuition. Tony was survived by his wife, Bonnie, and their 5-year-old son, Chris. Next, bomb hammers drove to Center Township in Beaver County to the C.S. Kim School of Karate. And there, 22-year-old Gary Lee was working out with his friend, George Thomas III. Gary was black and his friend was white. Richard entered, pointed the gun at George before deciding to shoot Gary because he was black. Diane Wenzig was sitting in her pizza shop when she heard the gunshots. She saw bomb hammers just calmly walk by at a normal pace, walk towards his Jeep, and try to leave. Diane wrote down his license plate number before heading over to the karate school. When she walked in, she saw Gary Lee in his karate gear on the floor. He stopped breathing as she tried to administer some kind of help to him. But due to her efforts, police now had bomb hammer's plate number and a description. Even though he was only 22, Gary Lee had really big ambitions. He had wanted to become a music producer. He grew up in Aliquippa with his mother and sister. Gary was a big guy, well over 6 feet tall. Many said he looked like a football player. But he was a gentle, quiet guy. While he worked on his plans to become a rap producer, he worked at Giant Eagle Grocery stocking shelves. Gary and George had only recently begun taking the karate class. George was one of Gary's pallbearers at his funeral. John Fratangeli, a patrolman for Aliquippa, was near the Aliquippa Ambridge Bridge when he saw bomb hammers drive by in his Jeep. He followed him without flashing his lights until he could get some kind of backup. When another patrol arrived driven by Sergeant Jim Mann, Fratangeli put on his lights, fully expecting a shootout. Finally, around 3:30 p.m., bomb hammers was pulled over and arrested in Ambridge without incident. Officer Fratangeli said the man was emotionless and he didn't say anything. and there was no doubt in his mind that the killing would have continued. Sergeant Mann, however, had the opposite opinion. When they pulled the Jeep over, he thought they might have had the wrong guy. He said his appearance was very neat. He was wearing a seatbelt. But when they looked in the back seat, they found two Molotov cocktails. So obviously this was the right guy. Overall, that killing spree lasted over 2 hours and went through three different townships. All different kinds of schools had been in lockdown until they heard the word that the shooter was apprehended. Police suspect the killer was headed to Ambridge Synagogue when he was caught. So who knows how much more carnage he would have inflicted had Diane Wenzig not written down his plate number. That one action saved countless lives. That and the work of those two officers. Richard Baumhammers was charged with 5 counts of criminal homicide, 1 attempted homicide, 8 counts of ethnic intimidation, 3 counts of arson, 2 counts of criminal mischief, reckless endangerment, violation of firearms, aggravated assault, and 2 counts of institutional vandalism. Search of his home provided some interesting findings, too. There was a document written by Baumhammers which read pretty much like a manifesto. In it, he referred to himself as chairman. The document said Europe and the U.S. were being outnumbered by minorities and immigrants. And he also had a website devoted to ending non-white immigration. It's really weird, in my opinion. I mean, how can you champion the rights of only certain immigrants? I mean, to me, that just doesn't make sense. A judge ruled Baumhammers unfit to stand trial and ordered a 90-day psychiatric evaluation. So 3 psychiatrists declared that he was unstable. But all 3, however, came up with a different diagnosis for him. Paranoid schizophrenic, delusional disorder, and psychiatric thought disorder. On May 9, 2001, a jury found him guilty on all 19 charges. It only took the jury 20 minutes to decide to sentence him to death by lethal injection. But as in most death sentences, this is tied up in appeals. He was scheduled to be executed on March 18, 2010, but Judge Jeffrey A. Manning granted an indefinite stay of execution. Baumhammers has repeatedly tried to get his sentence thrown out, citing ineffective representation by his lawyers and misleading testimony by psychiatrists. And that's because of Dr. Michael Wellner. He testified that Baumhammers was suffering from delusional disorder, but he'd been quoted by different newspapers as saying he was schizophrenic. So for now, Baumhammers sits on death row, which has pretty much outraged the victims' families. And I wish I could say that this was an isolated case, but due to the Tree of Life synagogue shootings this past year, there seems to be no end to this hate. And I've heard on the news here that lately in the areas of South Hills and Lawrenceville and Pittsburgh, they've been finding a lot of hate-filled flyers and graffiti. But I will say that otherwise, after that shooting, the community did come together. I think quite a few synagogues in the area are looking into guards and possible metal detectors. And it's a sad reality. I mean, there shouldn't have to be guards in places of worship, and people shouldn't get shot because of their religion. I just really can't get over the fact that anyone wants a country that isn't diverse, because I think it would be pretty boring. We can discover so many new things from each other. All the different types of people are what I particularly love about this city, because I grew up in a predominantly white area, and I hated it. It was boring. When I moved here and I saw different types of people on a day-to-day basis, I thought it was great. You have to remember that good and bad people come in all kinds of skin color, and that's something you learn if you're honest with yourself. Like I said, I'm still so baffled by a man who was proud to have immigrant parents, but he resorted to killing people that he thought had immigrated here. It doesn't make sense, but, you know, then again, he wasn't mentally well. So that was the case of Richard Baumhammer's. I think it's important to do episodes like this one because this type of hate is very alive and real right now. And knowledge is sometimes the only power we have to fight it. So educate yourself and those around you. We can't let this kind of hate win. When that Tree of Life shooting happened, there were t-shirts made here in Pittsburgh that said, "Stronger than hate." And you can still see a lot of those banners hanging over stores with that saying. It's really cool. And for the scary few that support hate, there's a lot more of us who do not, and we won't stand for it. So do what you can, keep voting in elections, keep informed about what's going on. If you see someone being bullied because of their race or religion, stand up for them. You know, Pittsburgh's stronger than hate, America is stronger than hate, and the world is stronger than hate. Thanks a lot for listening to this week's episode. Remember to get your tickets for the True Crime Podcast Festival this July in Chicago. I'm really excited to go. I will be there, of course, representing Red Rum Blonde, and there's going to be a crazy slew of amazing podcasts there. Here's just some of them: Trace Evidence, Canadian True Crime, The Trail Went Cold, Already Gone, Southern Fried True Crime, Criminology, Dark Poutine, All Crime No Cattle, True Crime Fan Club, Corpus Delicti, Mens Rea, Pleasing Terrors, Ignorance Was Bliss, Strictly Homicide, Asian Madness, and Generation Y. That's just to name some. And basically, that's my podcast subscription playlist. I love all of those shows. And I'm pretty excited to get to meet all those hosts. And you can too. So go to tcpf2019.com and get your tickets. It's going to be a blast. I'm super excited. We will be missing Justin from Mysterious Circumstances, though. I guess he's not going. He had some kind of dispute with his tickets. Send me your suggestions at redrumblonde.com. And I've been thinking of starting a Patreon, but I have no idea what good perks would be for that. So let me know what you think. You can also find me on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. Thank you so much for listening, and catch you guys next week.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.